This is an interview with Dr. William H. Evans at 932 Belmont Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, on December 26, 1994, by Paul Zimmerman for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the History of Medicine in Youngstown and the Mahoning Valley. Dr. Evans, what influenced you to become a doctor?
Well, when I was a small boy, I worked in a drugstore, and this man who owned three drugstores, he was a general practitioner in small town of Kentucky, and I worked for him several years, and he really influenced me more than anybody else to become a doctor. In fact, I really didn't know what I wanted to until I started working for him. But I worked for him for 6 years, I think.
Was this right up until the time you went to college?
In grade school and high school. But the funny thing about it, not funny thing, it's a sad thing about it, that he had a ruptured appendix and died when the first year I was in college in Ohio.
What was medical school at that time?
But school was hard. You know, we went to school 5 days and a half. We got there at 8 o'clock and we got to 6. And then you went home and did your homework. That was all homework.
You suppose it's just as hard now?
Well, yes, I think it's just as hard now, but the course is different. I don't know what the course is. I do know it's different, considerably different, and maybe it's better. It probably is better because they've done a great number of advances in medicine that I know of.
How many years did you go to medical school?
I went to college 2 years and medical school 4.
I see. Is there anything exciting happened to you while you were in medical school? Anything took part or anything like that?
No, I just worked hard. I just worked all out of it. I don't think there's many boys that didn't do anything else. And I played professional football, but I was too small to be much good, so I quit playing after that.
Well, then, did you come to Youngstown to serve your internship?
No, I was down there. And I went to Massachusetts Infirmary in Boston. And from there, I went to New York Infirmary. I spent 3 months in Harlem down here because, I had to take examination for the physicians. And I spent 3 months there while I was took examination in April, May. In May, I got the first appointment in June, July.
I see. So when you were going to school, what were the situations or the conditions like? Well, when you were interning at these various hospitals?
Oh, you worked.
How paid?
You didn't get any pay.
No pay at all?
I didn't get any. I got room, board, and laundry. That's all I got.
How many years did this consist?
Five.
Good thing you got that one right away.
Well, I know that, as one of the men said, when I went to Harlem, I took examination. I told him I would just be there until I left my pump over to New York out here. And he was a very nice fellow. Dr. Meade, good man. But the institution is a smaller institution. This is a big one. And the departments were quite good. I do say so myself.
What made you decide to specialize in eye and ear?
Well, I was there, and I was undecided, you know, when you take your general internship, it's what you would do. And one of the men that I've gotten some case reports out from, he was one of them, he was an eye and nose man. He talked to me about it, and I said, I decided then I would go.
You think that's been a wise decision, now you look back on it?
Oh, I wouldn't change it.
Wouldn't change it.
But I think probably I would have been happy in any profession. One of the other men there was an orthopedic surgeon, and he offered to help me. After all, you have to have a little help once in a while, you know. But in other words, he would give me some recommendations. But I could have gotten an appointment, you know, and warning, you know, if you tried hard enough. That's all I have to try.
When you were going through school, how did you pay your way through?
Well, my folks helped me some. And
spend in New York?
I spent 21 months.
21 months. What was your imprint in New York?
Oh, no, I liked that place a lot. I hate to leave Boston, I hate to leave New York, I would hate to leave here.
Well, then, you started your practice then?
Well, I could have gone several places because there were men there looking for people to come in with them, you know, work for them, but I would come in as associates. And Dr. Gibson, Dr. Beard, they came over, in fact, they were over several times. And so, if you were there, you had 8 months in that service, and they allowed you 3 2-week vacations. But I didn't take the one vacation, didn't have any money to go anywhere, you know. And so Dr. Beard said, you come over, the youngest son, on your vacations and spend 2 weeks working in the office and see how it is. And then you'll never know when you'll come back. So I did. I came over in July in 25. And worked 2 weeks in the office, and I liked the people, I liked everything about it. So I went back to New York, and had 6 months more to finish the service. And so I told him to hold and try it for a year. And Dr. Craig in New York, he was one of the surgeons in New York I heard from me. He offered me a job, and so I told him when I was coming over here, I promised the people I'd come over here for a year, and he said, well, they would do, if you go over there and stay 6 months, see if you like it, and then come back home, if you don't like it, well, let me know, and I'll have a job for you when you come back. But I'm glad I didn't go back to New York. I think I would probably may have been a surgeon in New York down here, but the life here is nicer than there, I think. I go back often now. A lot of my meetings once a year, I'll go back there and spend a few days, courses. But the longer I'm away from New York, the less I care about it.
What were your impressions, or what were your feelings about Youngstown before you'd ever come here? What did you think about
it? I didn't know about it at all.
Do you have any preconceived notions about it at all?
No, I haven't. But I didn't know anything about it much. I mean, how are you?
Paul? When you came to Youngstown, did you started, you said you started with this other doctor, was it?
Yeah,
assistant.
He was in Dollar Bank. Told me that he was the first runner in the Dollar Bank. And we met in that office. We stayed in that office until a year ago, last February, and we came up here because they were doing building over. They You see that building?
Yeah.
So it'd be nice, but they haven't finished it yet. We stayed 2 months after they started working on it, but the missus could have. The woman come in and clean up the evening, the nurses up, come in the morning and clean up again because it was so dusty and dirty. So we decided to come up here.
I see. How extensive was your practice in the beginning? Changed any over the years?
Oh yes. I mean, our ear, nose, and throat has changed an awful lot. I'm the only man in there understand what's doing. I hear it wasn't so, you know.
Anybody's even specialized even further?
Yes. They do they do the ear, nose, and throat. But I started doing it and I kept on doing it. But Gibson died later. And Dr. Beard for 9 years, and he had a heart attack and died. So I got Dr. Sick. And Dr. Odom came with me. And they stayed away for the war. Dr. Ross went away and started my office by himself. And in fact, he stayed here during the war. And he had much as he wanted to do, really, because of the love of the eye and other took that away.
Uh-huh.
And so we came back and I said, well, I do got more practice than you. Why don't you go out by yourself? So he went out by himself. and Dr. Odom, he was in the Air Corps. So he decided he was going to leave. And he had those services in Manhattan on here in New York. And he said that, well, he thought he was going down to Philadelphia and take another year. And then he was going south someplace. He came from Virginia. So I had got heart with that. And Dr. Bruce came, and Dr. Rick came, they've been here for 21, 22 years, something like that.
I see.
But, they've always had a big practice. When I came here, I was busy full time. I said, you know.
You never had a slack day, huh?
No, really they didn't. But that's reason I think I was so happy. But if you work hard and are busy, you don't have time to be disruptive. And the people here are nice. I like the people. That's the reason I stayed in the first place.
Do you ever cooperate any firsts or have any firsts in medicine next time?
What do you mean first?
No, first in the treatment. Be the first one to treat a specific condition. Eye, ear, nose, and throat, or something like this. Being one of the only men in town, probably had a lot of firsts, but.
So, but the old Dr. Lewis and Dr. George Pugh here, they did the first corneal transplant here. But, I don't think it was the first that I did. A lot of mastoids. We had a lot of mastoids. People were doing mastoids when I got here.
Uh-huh.
The day before antibiotics, you see.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of mastoids, a lot of sinus conditions. I said, we were in the morning, we came down at 12 o'clock on Sunday, and we were usually here before. They was doing mastoid dressings and treating sinus and things like that. You don't do that now.
You're not sad about that, I imagine. What was a typical day like in your practice, say, in the late 20s, early 30s?
Well, about 6:30. And moved to Northside Hospital. Give you my store addresses. Nurses were working 7 to 7 those days. There's two shifts. A lot of times I would do my master dressing at the before the 7 o'clock nurse went off. But then come down if it's because he had to have he did a lot of house calls because there's a lot of contagious conditions in these. And kids get measles or whooping cough. They kept it home. But there were a lot of ear conditions. So I made a lot of house calls. But, maybe I make a couple in the morning. Maybe I'd go to the office and work and go back to St. Louis at noon. And go back to the office and work at 6 o'clock. And maybe I'd go to the hospital or I work, go out and make house calls. But I'd be usually at home and work from 9 to 11 o'clock. So you know, time starts over again.
How frequently did you have to hospitalize? Did they hospitalize as much?
Oh, yeah, the last time. A lot of pneumonia. A lot of people died of pneumonia the other day, you know. Because you know, they had antibiotics. And, but you hospitalize a lot of times, not contagious conditions. If they had ears, you would. You know, one time, this fellow came in to St. Louis Hospital. And, see anyone intercept us around now because of antibiotics.
Did you perform your own surgery?
Hmm?
You've always performed your own surgery? Your surgery?
But all my own.
Yeah.
My special, yes. I couldn't do anything outside of my special.
Okay. What kind of things did you perform in your office?
We did a lot of people, a lot of mastoids. We did master dressings after they were able to leave the hospital. And we did a lot of sinus treatment. Well, we washed out sinus 2 months before they clear up. Now they don't last very long because of all the antibiotics. The same type of surgery. But now when I started my training, the last 2 centimeters for me, so no one didn't. The operation is for detached retina, not satisfactory at all. But Goldman over in Switzerland, the first type of operation, it's been improved much after that. Now there's some people who do only detached retina, retinas.
Really?
And
what were the conditions like in the hospital at this time?
They had one wing in St. Louis Hospital when I came to town, as a north wing.
Uh-huh.
And they operated with the other two, everything was over there, really. When they built the south wing, and they built the west wing, and they built the extension of the west wing, and they built the building, the other south wing, I don't know what they're going to call that.
Did you, what were the facilities like, as far as the,
they were pretty good, but, you know, there's a lot of things that they didn't do those days. They had no open heart surgery, as I said.
Yeah.
And they had no, they didn't have a neuro brain surgeon here at that time. We needed a neurosurgeon call. We get Dr. Gardner or somebody from Cleveland Clinic or somebody from Pittsburgh down. They would come down and see him. And if they felt it was a long thing, while they'd take him back or they'd send him back. But they didn't do as much neurosurgery in Cleveland Clinic for those days as they do now. Do they, you understand? They had one man in that service there at Cleveland Clinic. And I think Dr. Beck at Lakeside did general surgery along with neurosurgery. And everything was out, so I mean.
Did you have any role in developing of the staff at the hospital?
Well, I mean, an ordinary role, I'd say. Worked on committees, and I was president of the staff 5 years, but that's long enough, because I think it's time for somebody else to get it, you see.
Yeah. Who runs the hospital? Who ran the hospital then?
The nurses, the nuns, they own the hospital, so to speak. But it's a non-profit organization, you understand what I mean? And anyway, that's the different type of, I think it's run better than it was then, because everything is better than it was then. You know, after all, everything progressed.
And they didn't want to buy others' mistakes?
Well, not necessarily mistakes, but they improve on things as you go along. I mean, if you don't improve, after all, this world comes to, you don't improve. Sure.
Well, how about officially who ran the hospital?
Yeah. Well, the staff, of course, they have something to say about it, you understand.
Right.
And it's a very harmonious thing. Mm-hmm. No bossing too much, I would say. You had rules and regulations, because the thing has to have rules and regulations. If it didn't have rules and regulations, it wouldn't get along.
I see. So it's been a cooperative venture over the years.
Sure. I'm sure of that.
What were some of the big killers? You mentioned some like pneumonia and things like this, but what were some of the big killers that you saw?
Diabetes. That was certainly a big killer. Developed insulin, I think probably about 1920, something like that, 18 and 20, I forget the date. But that was banning the best up in Toronto. But it was a crude type of insulin, you know?
Yeah.
And, some of a different story, different types of insulin now. But you have people who just treat diabetes. Dr. Jarslin in Boston had a diabetic clinic, and he's the only person, his clinic is the only people that I know of that was treating the diabetes alone. But you have diabetes, you have a lot of complications. And you have to have other people say, they already have enough density, they have high blood pressure, eye conditions, and so forth.
Well, in your specialty, the incident of death has declined, hasn't it?
For sure.
And what would you say it is today from ear infections, things like this?
Well, I don't, not very much. I'm not sure that what it is. A fair number of people from the complications of mastoid and sinusitis. I mean, they get a lot of sinus thrombosis surgery. That's where this big blood vessel, the vital brain, gets clotted because of the mastoid. And then the left and go with it, it extends all over the system, you get generalized septicemia.
So this was a big problem until the advent of the antibiotics. And
well, antibiotics was a great thing. They had was one of the first. And New York Prolosil. And that was the first type. And I remember the man that was over at Southside Hospital. I was seeing one of Dr. Wedger's patients, a very big man. I was over seeing him because I was conscious. So I just spinal puncture on him. So they made him too down in. Fed him this Prolosil. And he was the first person I ever had or I ever seen with bacterial meningitis of pneumococcal type that got better.
Beginning.
I don't say it's the first one that happened, but it's the first one I saw.
What kind of things did you have to treat patients with before any of these drugs?
Well, you use pneumonia, in other words. They've been with various things. They have serums. Serum is a you would simply inject the horse into the neck with a certain amount of bacteria, then it injected a little bit more later, a little bit more later, and finally they draw that out, that horse in various types of they tried that in pneumonia, and it was fairly successful, but only fairly successful,
I see.
And but part of the whole thing now, but I think the man's resistance might be better.
I see.
Now, part of that is pneumonia. Anyway, he got sick on Friday, and on Thursday morning, he passed away the following Thursday morning.
That was a medical advance because of the people being able to go to the doctor now.
Oh, yeah, they didn't go to the doctor. They didn't charge him. Nobody was refused, I'm sure that one might ever refuse.
What did you do about people who didn't pay?
No, I mean, I was trying to home out here. They used to have a bunch of people out there. I've done a lot of cataracts on those people present. County never paid, nobody paid anything. I didn't let it open. County paid up the hospital bill.
I see.
A lot of cross-eyed kids would come in the office and they and their family would be poor and destitute, out of work or something. They'd call up the relief down and they'd ask them if they'd take care of the hospital bill for a patient here, and they'd say, sure, they'd do it. That's all. They just took care of anybody else.
That's fantastic.
You hear a lot of stories, and I'm sure they're not true. But a lot of work is done.
I see.
You know, conscientious work, too.
You've dealt with allergies then, right?
Yeah.
If people tended to doctor themselves with allergy medicines of their own concoction or anything like this?
Some places there, but some doctors, they don't have it, but they'll mix up certain of the antigens together. And send it to them with instructions, and they have a nurse who they will give them injections.
What did people do about allergies before they started to become hives? What, how to deal with it?
They didn't do anything about it, no.
Has there been any great improvements in this field?
Science of immunology is great, and it hasn't developed yet entirely. It's not viable. They say that after all that happened, it's true. And immunology has something you're going to be able to develop from your cancer treatment eventually. Talk about somebody else with cancer. I don't think it's great. cancer. But I'm not a specialist in that.
One of the antigens start to be used as far as the allergy treatments.
When? Before my time, I think the first National Allergy Society that met in Cleveland, and it was in 1926 or 1927, and the first society was born. There were some people who were doing some work on it before that, but I'm sure there were a lot. Some have done a lot before that, but not too much. I mean, they didn't do too much. They didn't know too much about it. I mean, it's improved considerably, but it hasn't put away to go yet.
Do people treat themselves at home very much? Various things, eye disorders.
Things you've ever heard, you know, curious for everything. But,
what were some of these? Can you remember any of them?
Oh, yeah. Cheap Penny Tea was one.
What's that, sir?
Cheap Penny Tea was one.
Oh, yeah.
They would use that to get the leaves break out on people. I don't know what else to use it. That was excreted from a sheep, you know. Get it in the water and boil it. But I don't guess if anybody ever died from it, but it didn't happen to break out anyway. Well, I could get them some books. After all, they get auditory things. I have some books if you want one. I can read. All you know how fertile a man's imagination can get. Well, then, after all, some people imagine a lot of things. There. Now, talking about acupuncture. I thought my phone was about it, and I said, well, I thought this individual was in China. He said that, after all, when you watch the stoic individual, you know, Chinese are, and they've been indoctrinated to do this and do that and do nothing else. Try to use the same treatment on an American that you would on a Chinese and an American, I'm sure of that.
Yeah. I can see the difference there. You did all your house calls. What kind of car did you drive?
First car I had was a Dodge.
A Dodge.
Well, don't quit, of course. Sure. It was a good one, too. I bought up Strasbourg Motor Company. Nice people to deal with.
I see. Well, how much did the car cost then?
Well, I can't remember what that car cost. But I do remember this. In 1941, I bought a Cadillac car and paid $2,200 for it. Now what the thing would cost. It would cost $2,500. $8,000
or more.
Yeah, more.
Yeah.
And I drove about 2,000 miles. I came back from the service. I drove over out to San Francisco because they told me to wait for me to be sure and drive it out there, so I wouldn't get transportation. And I had to go over to Oakland and back. So I drove it out there. And my wife stayed out there, but she didn't have any gasoline for cars. So but we drove it back. And I drove it about 55 miles. And she drove it a couple of years. And we gave it to our nephews, and they drove it for a while. I had a fellow tell me that he bought the thing, and he drove for 150,000 miles and said it was the best car he ever had. 150,000. But that's the way things were made. Everything to make. I think they just expect it to last a little while.
Right, right.
That keeps the economy going, but
I'm disappointed.
But they think it's a new car every 2 years, 4 years. I don't drive very much. I usually keep the car about 5 years.
When you were in the service, what branch were you in?
Navy.
Where were you stationed at?
I was about in Chicago, you know, first. And then I went to 6 weeks to Oakland, or San Francisco, or anything, but I missioned the ship about 3 months to get that thing in shape. And then I was at sea until 44. And I came back to Norfolk, at the naval hospital there. I stayed there until the war. Until the war is over.
Yeah. Then you went back to civilian life.
Yeah.
While your service, what kind of things did you have happen to you? While you were, while you were on the ship?
Well, I didn't do my own specialty.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. We had 11 doctors on our ship. And our ship was a great ship with guns on it. We carried soldiers and Marines in to these islands out there. And we'd stay there until the island was secure and take the casualties back on our ship. And the hospital ships would come take the casualties from us.
Oh, I see. You were like the emergency room, so to speak.
Yeah. We were still there first time all the time. And then when they went down to secure, we would, I bet they had a hospital on a base then, too. And we would take the ship full of a lot of the patients back wherever the hospital was we were going to. Probably cities all the time.
I see.
But after the Philippine invasion, I was relieved. And I went back home to the hospital and stayed there. But it wasn't too hard, but you know, it wasn't easy to do.
Right. Okay, getting back to civilian practice then. Say, like, if someone had in your condition or my condition, how long did it take them for them to recover from this?
Well, that depends on
let's put it this way, did it take longer then than it does now?
Before antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
It sure did take longer. And stirrups were not known then, and we were sterilized by a lot of high conditions, wretched conditions, and certain pollution helps them a lot. But all people, I think, I'm sure that they recovered better, quicker than expected. But they're still, after all they die, now old age, so to speak, senility.
Yeah.
They didn't have any heart transplants then, you know. The first lung was taken out in St. Louis while I was a doctor. And in fact, I met the doctor. He was a doctor that had the first lung removed.
Oh, I see.
He lived in Pittsburgh. I happened to be down in Pittsburgh to near one time, and Tom could introduce him to me. He said he's the first fellow in the country that had his lung removed. Tom Emma Graham took it out. He just died just recently. So there's been a lot of changes in place. But some of the pioneers, like Harley Cushing, you know, he's a pioneer in brain surgery. I remember him very well. He worked in Peterborough Brigham Hospital in Boston. I've seen him work. That's two pioneers.
How did you collect your fees? What was it? You have a billing system so you can pay on the spot?
Well, I can pay on the spot. Doctors didn't tell you during the pressure, they couldn't pay. And then this number, the mails were down, as I remember, they were down to about, for a while, down to about 12% of capacity.
I never see that again.
And the people were out of work, and they couldn't pay. Some people paid after they got back to work. Other people forgot about it. So,
what was fee schedule like? What did you charge for the various? Do you remember?
The jail. He charged around $125 for a mastoid, and that was through the aftercare. And aftercare was sometimes for a month or 6 weeks. And I don't forget now what we did charge for the cataract, but glaucoma. It's about the same treatment for glaucoma then as you do now. You have dynamox added to the treatment. And of course some treatments in the fine, but they have, you know, I have people in the area, they always try these things. A lot of times go back to the old.
What were the doctors like in the hospital back in the time when we first practiced?
Oh, you mean the interns or the attending staff?
Oh, the attending staff.
Oh, they were very nice. You know. Sure. I don't think there was. They're a little bit more casual than they were not are now, I think. I think they weren't quite as much of a hurry as they were. But, I worked longer hours, I'm sure. Much average that job later.
Who are some of the leaders in Youngstown in medicine?
Well, Clark, he was a medical man. Dr. Shabundi, a surgeon. Dr. Hauser was a surgeon. Dr. Nelson in town, he's about my age. He trained with Dr. Shabundi. Dr. Lance was followed Dr. Shabundi. Dr. McNamara was a little bit same business. Dr. Whelan was, he was older than that. I don't remember who he was there after. Was coming along. Dr. Hallman, I think, was the first man that did obstetrics GYN alone. Most of the general practitioners were obstetrics. But, you ought to see Dr. Fisher and so he's quite an interesting character. Nice fellow, too.
Who were some of the doctors that were your contemporaries that were?
Dr. Keyes, Dr. Hartson, Dr. Goldcamp, Dr. Bierkamp, they all live now. Dr. Pearson, Dr. Wortley, Dr. Beard, Dr. Gibson. Gibson was the star of all these. He started, and Hartzell, Bierkamp, and Goldcamp were with him, and they left. And Dr. Pearson and Washburn, and Painter, were with him, and then they left. And Dr. Beard and McCall came, Dr. McCall left. Dr. Patterson left. He was there when I was there, just for about 6 months. And but Dr. Gibson started all those people in Youngstown. He was quite a character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice fellow.
Where was he from?
He's right here, born and raised here and so forth. He's a quiet individual. Came in one morning, you know, and Dr. Beard was away, and I was in office by myself, and I was working, of course. And he said, "Doctor," he says, "you look a little tired this morning." I said, "Well, I am." I told him what I had to do. I had to operate on a fellow's eye. He had to draw a coma. And I had to go home. And I went to bed, and the more longer I got to bed, I had to get up and see a tonsil. And that time, it was time to go home and take a shower and get to work, because I got to work home by 6:30. And I hadn't had much sleep. But he said, you know, I've always made the rule. When I was out late the night before, I'd sleep late the next morning and make up for it. I think he did, too, most of the time. But he had these fellows with him that were good men and worked. He's a nice fellow, too. But he was an organizer better than most of us.
I see. He must have been.
Yeah.
Was he the first man next time to deal in iron in his throat, or was there somebody before him?
Well, I don't know. I think there were some, but I don't remember who they were. I can't tell you who they were. That's where I came. They were the main ones of the flood.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure there was somebody before Dr. Gibson. And you probably did eye, ear, and nose, and throat in general.
How did you keep up with medicine over the years?
Well, I felt pretty good. Tried to. But you know, it was hard. Of course, I was single then. And if I was going to write an article, I lived in Lincoln Apartments first, and I moved up here. Parkway Tower. So I would pile all the things up that I was going to read, and I got in bed and I'd make my notes. And when I get sleepy, I just turn over and go to sleep. But I had a nice girl who took care of my room for me. And she'd pick up stuff off the floor that I paid for, of course, you know. I'd do a little bit of a ball, which was very welcome, I'm sure. But I read a lot. I mean, I didn't have anything else to do except go home and go to bed and go to sleep and read. And I have all those medical meetings. I have taken courses. They have courses someplace 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, on a certain subject. You go there with New York, Chicago, Philadelphia. One of the nicest courses I ever took was down in Memphis, a book with Dr. Barnhill. Very, very good course. But there's many courses if people are inclined to go to them, and I think most people do.
You were inclined to wait.
Well, you had to. I was meeting in October down in Dallas. About 11,000 doctors out here in North Dakota, doctors down there.
That's fantastic.
and they have instruction courses, room where they would be, but they're always overfilled. You had to buy a ticket, $2 for a ticket for an hour. And they use it when they put your nose and throat in the morning and eye in the afternoon. And that's the destruction course. And if they had your nose and throat in the morning and eye in the afternoon, they had lectures. They had two big places there, hold several thousand people, both of them. You could go and listen to lectures. And they had movies, and they had sound for these exhibits. And it's quite a thing.
Never taught in any of these seminars?
No, I had to teach. Because I always had to learn so much.
How about here in town? Have you ever taught at all?
No.
Neither did I.
I've talked to the nurses a few times around, but some fellows love it.
Uh-huh.
And those who like it are much better than those who love it.
Yeah.
but I think I called the places, the fellows who are around the larger cities in the world, they do that. And of course, you know, if a man coming from no town, he needs to brush up on things rather than that. But I have given papers, I have probably 15, 20 papers I get.
These are written up in the journals?
Yeah.
Well, let's get to some of the other problems. Maybe were big problems. Was it the problem of industrial accidents, was this a greater problem when first started?
Yeah. The mills and nothing, but none of them had safety bases there. That's the only thing I ever saw the union and management agree on. They put a finger on the man and said, now you have to wear those goggles, you have to wear those safety bases, because it's for your good and your own health. We had a lot of steel flying in your eye. That's intraocular foreign body, intraocular.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people lost eyes. Now about the only time we ever see an intraocular foreign body is a small plant where they have one or two men who have some safety regulations. Or a farmer out here beating on some metal with a hammer, a piece of metal flies in his eye. They're about the only, or some kid that gets some explosive and does something in his eyes. But we had a tremendous number of them when I first came. A lot of them when I was in Boston, much as I am, we did a lot of those industries up there. And we would see one or two a week. And now I bet they don't see one. Months. So that's one of the great savings of our vision. Of course, the Hearing Society, we had, that's a great thing over here, hearing the speech. I know I've talked to a bunch of women, and they were using and Russian making these little pot holders, you know. So I told them, I said, they get busy and get something established because they knew much of the heart in that way. And I gave them some information about it because Cleveland just organized one. And I knew something about it and gave us some information, and I just did. But we helped him a lot. Emma Kutcher was one of my secretaries. And Dr. Odom, who was associated with me, went out and Mr. Hitchcock out here went with him, and they bought the place, the building, the home.
When was this started? Do you remember about what time?
Let me see, it was, it must have been about 30 years ago, 25 or 30 years ago. And of course there's been a lot done since then. But keep these operations. Treatment for one form of nephus, otosclerosis. And that was devised in Thurston maybe 25 years ago. And there was a lot of advancements in medicine. I'm sure the other branches of medicine are equally. Everything has improved considerably, but it wasn't too bad then.
Would you say that medicine has been exciting for you?
Yes,
as a profession?
Very much. That's because I've loved it. I've loved it every minute of it. I wouldn't want to bring places with anybody. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I like it right here.
Have you taken any civic responsibilities in your time at all?
I'm donated to my candidates. I mean, not the ones that was done a good job. And that doesn't mean that Democrats or Republicans. I've given both of them money. And I felt that they were doing a good job, but some of my nerves that I didn't feel was good enough. I wouldn't give them anything. This thing of giving to a party, I think, is terrible. That includes everybody, you know, let's pay for them. Some of those guys aren't good.
Yeah. I noticed the certificates from the Selective Service Board. How did you get those?
That's when the war first started. They asked me to do it.
Oh, I
see. Yes, I did. Sometimes, you know, the local draft boards around, some places around this area, that have maybe asked to do it someplace, they didn't have a man to examine them, and they wanted to find out exactly what it was, what it looked like, and how much you could hear and what you couldn't hear about, who's been chosen, so on and so forth. And that's what they would send them to me, and I'd examine them. Free of charge, I might say.
What are your impressions about things, about what the government should be able to do for medicine?
I think that, they're making too much politics out of it. And people have never suffered for any medical care that I know of, other than them. I'm sure the other doctors have done the same thing that I've done. And there are a lot of people on welfare. I don't know if they're bought on welfare or not. But they waste a lot of money. But I'm sure the government, that's what the government needs. The government wants study. I mean, the congressmen want, they want to spend it. I don't know what they're going to do about it, because after all, that if you try to save anything, they spend money so fast, and print the money so fast that it devalues yours immediately. That's the reason that the car costs so much today, and when I have to buy it before.
Yeah. Well, how do you think the younger doctors would feel about this treating people without charge? Do you think they have the same attitude about it?
I don't know. It depends on the individual. Somebody, I'm sure if you would say, I'm probably someone, you know that.
Yeah.
You have all sorts of people in medicine. As soon as you have all sorts of people in engineering or any other profession,
yeah,
you have good and bad and indifferent. And so I think it depends all together on that.
What is your opinion about today's new breed of doctors, they like to call them?
Oh,
they're any different?
They're better grounded than we were, I'm sure of that. But you see, there's no corner on knowledge. And if you just, the fellow who's studying and applying himself, but medicine is too big for any one person to know it all. Too much for any one person to know. That has to be for the specialists. You're talking about the general practitioner. The general practitioner, I think, is essential. But he can't know it all. That's why he has to refer people to specialists every so often.
Have you ever had any trouble with practitioners and not referring people?
Oh, of course, I don't know all everybody in all of them's practice, but they've all referred a lot of people.
What I mean is, like, if you run across someone in the hospital that should have been referred to you, it wasn't that a general practitioner was trying to still treat.
Well, the main thing is that that way you don't always know the circumstances.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, always know this. There's always two, three sides. Only two, three or four sides sometimes. You understand?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you will say, "Oh, here I'm at that test, but it's to you." And he'll say, "Oh, don't do that because after all, that's going to cost me some money." And sometimes I'll say to the wife, "Oh no, don't. You're all right. I don't want any more anybody else seeing her." See?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different ways, reasons for the doctor not referring patients. And the final thing is most of them, I think most every doctor has much or more than you do.
How would you answer the critics that say that medicine is becoming dehumanized, that doctors don't deal with the patients as other human beings?
Well, I think some are, some in the way they are. But you see, I don't think you can be as human as you were years ago. I mean, this sense of human, that you can give them a lot of time, you can visit with them.
Yeah.
But they have to work to run those more or less machine-like things. I like to visit with my patients and so on and so forth because I don't work as hard as I used to on purpose. I can work harder, but I don't want to. That's all. And I kind of done enough. And I'm working for the fun of me when I say that. But I mean, I like to work and I like to do this, but I don't want to work too hard, so I'm staying down at night.
Yeah.
I can't see as many patients as I used to see. So when Dr. Greg Lewis goes away, I will see one and a half to be seen. But I do not see all of them. I don't do any emergency work. I won't get up at night for people. I'm 77 years old, you know. I won't get up at night.
The young guys handle that.
Yeah, let them get up. And I don't go to the hospital anymore except when special people come in, I will see them. And when they're away, I'll go see them.
Well, this is the thing that you all had to do. Every doctor's had to do when he was first starting out. He had to do about everything under the spectrum as far as getting up in the middle of the night, things like this.
Oh, sure, I've done that. Many times. Three or four times if necessary. So,
well, how about they say that doctors aren't as free as they used to be? Is that true?
What do you mean?
They have more restrictions for them, more rules for them to follow. They're not their own boss as much as they used to be.
Well, your own boss, I'm sure of that. But well, malpractice is getting to be a terrible thing.
Is it?
Yes. There's some doctors that spend $25,000, $30,000 for malpractice insurance. That's 1 year premium. Where's that coming from? That's come out of the patients, doesn't it?
Right. Why is this? Why is the increase in the malpractice suits?
Well, you know, why? The lawyers, they take a case on a contempt fee. The bigger the settlement, the more they get. That's true. And no doubt about it. That the legal profession is the cause of all of it. And you have to protect yourself. You have to do x-rays on people, you know, that ordinarily you wouldn't need them, maybe sometimes. And blood counts, blood work on, because you have to protect yourself.
I see. This might be part of the factor about where they have to send people to the hospital and get all this work done, just even maybe they may not need it, but you have to do it.
There are a lot of people used to be treated at home, so they didn't have money to go to the hospital.
Right.
But a lot of people have medical insurance, and they want to go to the hospital for checkup. Well, I think that's terrible. I don't think they need to go to the hospital for checkup. I've never been to the hospital for checkup. I've had a lot of checkups in my life. I go to my medical man every 6 months or a year. And I go to the hospital and get anything that needs to be on a basis that you're just there.
I see.
And then when you leave. But a lot of people figure, well, after all, the meal's paying for this. I want it. And let them go. But another thing, x-rays. A lot of insurance companies won't pay for x-rays unless they're in the hospital. Who in the hell's putting them in the hospital? X-rays, I mean, the insurance companies put them in the hospital.
That's
right. I mean, there should be some changes about those things, I'm sure of that. But I'm a run of insurance companies, and I don't practice law.
I don't know what you can do.
So I go on. I never sued yet. I know, thank God for that. But I think it's more luck than good sense, because I mean, I know some conscientious men who've had suits brought. So, I really don't care, but I think it's terrible that those things are part of the rules and regulations. See, my insurance, well, they say, well, after all, they might be x-rays and they don't need. Well, they can get x-rays in the hospital, they don't need the same as they get in place else.
That's right.
I think they changed the times a little bit from this company, though, I'm sure that they'll pay for x-rays on the outside. They go in the hospital and pay $80 or $100 a day for a room in order to get x-rays. Is that what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. What is your opinion about the PSRO regulations and stuff like this?
PSRO. Well, that was PSRO. Which one's PSRO?
That's the professional standards. They'll have the review board review doctors to make sure they're performing.
Well, yeah, that's political.
That's true.
Sure, that's something that I've done. But they, I think they're going to health insurance, and I don't know, the part of the whole thing is that you have to pay for it, they got taxes, the government down there, they don't have any money, and they have to have it, and the government cannot do things as cheap as they do them on the outside. Look at mail, look at the railroads. So those are two examples. And I get medicine. And have you found out about care? How much they've cut that down since it started? They pay it for old people over 65.
Right.
Well, I was the Arab. I saw an article the other day. It was Medicare wouldn't pay for the first day, I think it was the first day, and then they cut it down more and more and more because they don't have the money. They don't have the money.
Yeah, there's a limit to everything.
And I don't know how they're going to get money unless they to add taxes to you, and you ask somebody how much their income tax is. And if they don't have income tax, they have to print the money. And that causes inflation. This right now, the government brought that on. Nobody else brought that on, except the government. You didn't bring it on, I didn't bring it on. Nobody brought it on, except the government.
Well,
these congressmen, they don't want to save money. What the hell? They'll spend it, and get elected. That's what Roosevelt said. Franklin D. said, spend, get elected.
He proved it, too, didn't he?
Sure, he proved it. I think he did some good things, but he was lousy. He was lousy, I want to tell you. Okay.
Getting back to this, interesting. Have you seen the country's changed a great deal because of Franklin Roosevelt? I mean, was that a big thing in the way of politicians or what things as far as like the money? The people taking his advice, the other politicians?
Or was that? I followed his advice, you know. He said, my friends, you know, I had radio, he said, my friends. Well, he got them very particular.
Did you find that you weren't a fan of Franklin?
No, I didn't vote for him. I feel sorry for Herbert Hoover. After all, he was over in Europe, he did a fantastic job over there, you know, feeding those Europeans. And he was a smart man, but he was just at the university. He gave the land, the money to start at the university. He was very, very wealthy man. He made it all himself, too.
Right.
Engineer. But he didn't have the political know-how that Roosevelt did, though. I mean, I think Roosevelt liked it.
What was it like being not a fan of Franklin Roosevelt in a town like Youngstown? Everybody was wild over him.
Well, they didn't care. I didn't care. They didn't either. I didn't fight. I mean, it never made that much difference to me. Because I wasn't particularly interested in him or anybody else. I knew I had to live my own life the way I could, the best I could. I did. And I didn't argue with people like that.
You ever been able to go on any particularly interesting vacations?
Sure. Christopher, I'm going tired. I couldn't hardly wait to go away. Ed Paris and I went to Boca down. We flew down South America once. Went down to Mexico, Central America, and down the East Coast, the West Coast of South America, across the Andes, and up the West Coast. And they had DC, you had every kind of plane down there, DC-3s. That was the plane that was flying DC-2s. And we had an amphibian plane from Panama down to Guayaquil. And then we got a DC-2 from there. We can prove that the fellow got on the plane and was working for Pan Agra, Pan American on the West Coast. They owned half of this line, and the Greece line owned the other half. But then we, that's from Belmar to, that's from Belmar to Sayers. And Pan American had sailors coming back. But we got a flying boat from Rio up to what they call Dickies as a key of South Miami. And it took, we started out daybreak in the morning. And we would fly until about 4 o'clock. And we'd sit down and there it is. And it's 1, 2, 3 days and a half.
When did this vacation?
Back in '36, '37. But you know, simply, Dr. Odom and Dr. Wellness were in my office. But I've been a lot of places. I've been, you know, almost all over.
Ever visited overseas any of the hospitals?
Yes, I have. I've seen a lot of hospitals and out in various places I knew, but I'm always going to hospitals. Most of the hospitals, some of them terrible, some of them good. In America, I've better medicine than any country in the world. I talk about state medicine over in England, you know, they have some hospitals over 100 years old. They have them. They're not fit for pigs to be in. Imagine over 100 years old or something. And they don't have any money. See, they don't have money to do anything with now. But those people probably, some of them would budget. I'm sure they would. I wouldn't put up with it. But they go to this man, and they sit in line. And, of course he can't be. He's got maybe 100 patients to see. And how much, and he has so much time to do it in. Can't be very nice to most of them, I say.
Yeah.
Dehumanize and call dehumanization if you want to, but after all, it's the system. It isn't the individual thing, it's the system. That's what you're going to have here.
It's a good observation.
You're going to have that here, I'm sure of that. There'll be some people who want to pay and they'll get out of it. But there'll be a lot of people who do that, just like Kennel.
Yeah. In all your years of practice, is there anything that you would have changed?
What do you mean by that change?
What we've done over again?
What
I did differently?
Oh, I'm sure there's something. I don't know. No man could live in that many years, you know, since 1921 to the present time without wanting to change something, could it? I really don't know. It hasn't been so great that I remember, frankly. I'm sure there are many times that I would have changed it if I had the option of it, but I swear I can't remember, though. Maybe it's because I'm too complacent, or maybe it's because I'm easy to get along with, or are not hard to get along with. There's a difference between easy to get along with and hard to get along with.
That's true. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Evans.
Nice to see you.
I really appreciate it.
I'll tell you what you do. You ought to get Dr. Fisher. The time I told you.